do, and if there's something you don't want to answer, just
okay.
don't.
Okay. Sure.
First, let me tell you one side effect of the interviews is that you will get an increase in your autograph requests for a period of a couple, 3 weeks after it appears.
Oh, great.
Some fellows don't care for that, but most of them say what you do. They seem to like it, and that's good.
Well, I tell you, right now I'm running probably about 5 or 6 or 7 letters a week, something like that. You know, it's pretty nice to hear from some of the old guys, you know.
Yeah, I bet it is. It's nice to be remembered regardless of what it is.
That's exactly right.
Okay, you were a mere babe in arms when you signed.
Yeah, I signed when I was 16 years old, as a matter of fact. 16 years old in a Cardinal tryout camp up in Appleton, Wisconsin.
And
I was up there visiting relatives. I lived in Maryland at the time, but my mother and I, we were spending about 2 weeks up there. And the Cardinals had a tryout camp that came through, and my cousins talked me into going out and trying out. And actually, I didn't think, of course, I had a chance. And they said, oh, you throw pretty good, you know. So anyway, I went out. They had 300 kids the first day, and they cut it down to 100 the second and 50 the third day, and then we played a ball game or two. And they called three of us in and said, you know, we'd be hearing from them in the spring. And sure enough, a guy came to my door back in Maryland from Pennsylvania and signed me to a Cardinal contract.
Well, that's pretty good. Who was this? Was there a scout particularly? Was there someone in charge of the camp that you can remember?
The fellow up at the tryout camp was a fellow by the name of Tony Kaufman, who was an old pitcher.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of in charge of the camp and was looking at the ball players, and the fellow that signed me was an old Cardinal scout by the name of Pop Kelchner.
Kelchner?
Kelchner.
Kelchner?
K-E-L-C-H-N-E-R.
Okay. Did you not somewhere along the line get in the Dodgers organization?
Yes. Uh-huh. I spent 1944-45 with the Cardinal minor league clubs. Then I went in the Army for a year, and then in 47 and 48, of course, I was back, you know, into the Cardinal organization again. And at the end of the 48 season, I was drafted by the Dodger organization, and they sent me to Mobile in the Southern Association.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 1949 there, and after that season, they put me on the Montreal roster for the 50 season. Excuse me. They had a St. Paul club, and they had a Montreal club, both AAA clubs, and they were only allowed to draft two ball players off each club, so what they used to do is overload the one ball club with fellows they thought might be prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other club, they didn't put anybody over there, you know, on the other club that they thought was currently a big league prospect. But I was drafted off the Montreal roster by the Chicago Cubs and came to big leagues in 1950.
Yeah, the rule was the same then. They were required to keep you for a year?
You mean after the Cubs drafted me?
After being drafted, yeah.
At that time, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. I don't believe so.
Okay, and that's what it is now.
I don't believe it was in those days. I think they could have sent me down. I could have still been under contract to them, but they could have just sent me down to the minor leagues and brought me back up, you know.
Okay.
I don't believe there was any stipulation they had to keep you for a year.
Okay. That draft rule, I guess all the rules are changing pretty steadily. Well, you basically had two careers. You spent the first half as a starter and the second half in the bullpen.
That's exactly right.
Did you have a preference?
I tell you what, if I had known that I could throw as often as I could, as I found out later that I could, I would certainly like to have been relieving soon before, because I think I really had better luck relieving than I did starting. When I was traded, or sold rather, actually it was a trade for Newcomb, Don Newcomb, and Steve Bilko and I were traded out to the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Newcomb came to Cincinnati, and when I got out there, Walt Alston put me in about 45 ball games from the middle of June till the end of the year, and I found out that I could throw pretty often. And that's when I knew that I could relieve, and that was the beginning of another career for me.
Yeah, it sure was. And just statistically, the better of the two careers.
Well, I think statistically, you have to say my relieving ended up a little better than starting. The funny part about it, when I was starting, I had an awful lot of trouble with my control.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed that by pitching more often than three or four times a week in some cases that, you know, it sharpened up my control and probably gave me a lot more confidence in getting the breaking ball over the plate. And therefore, I think I became a better pitcher.
Talking about your control, like you just got taken out of the record books the other day.
That's what I understand. Someone was telling me that.
Yeah, they was the Baseball Committee on Statistical Accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in an attempt to do away with so many no-hitters they're getting and redefine them.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, kind of silly. You know, they could do away with wars by redefining war. Doesn't mean that there's any fewer people killed.
That's exactly right.
But you were... They weren't touching you, but you'd walked, what, seven or eight guys through seven innings?
Well, what happened was, yeah, I walked a few guys. I was throwing pretty good, but I was wild. And, of course, I had walked two guys, and then they sacrificed them over, and the guy scored on the fly ball. So I was actually behind 1-0 at the end of seven innings. So then they pinch hit for me in the top of the eighth. And then Herschel Freeman and Joe Black pitched the last three innings because we lost it in the 10th,
mm-hmm.
2-1. We tied it up in the 9th. And, of course, we had a no-hitter at the end of 9 innings, and then Milwaukee won it in the 10th.
That was the definition of a no-hitter forever until the other day, 9 innings.
Right.
And now because Black gave up the hit in the 10th,
right.
They've scratched you from the book, which I don't think that that's going to affect too many people. I think everybody will still.
Uh-huh.
And you were you three were the first, and you may not know this, the first in the 20th century
uh-huh.
to pitch a multi-man no-hitter.
I had heard that, but, you know, I wasn't sure because I really don't keep a lot of records, nor do I keep up too much with statistics, but I had heard that. Someone had told me that, yes.
Yeah, a couple guys did it back in 1880 or something, but you were the first guys in the modern time.
Well, I thought what was really funny about it was the six or so no-hitters that were pitched during that time that were combination no-hitters that one of the other fellows that had one, we went to the same high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Steve Barber.
He was the same. He walked like 8 or 9 guys that day.
Yeah, right. And evidently, with a lot of wild guys come out of Maryland. We both went to the same high school, although I'm quite much older than he is.
Did they change pitching coaches in there any time, or is it the same guy?
Well, I think probably that he played for a different guy than I did. I don't think the guy was around that I played for in high school.
They don't last forever, that's for sure.
No.
What do you think of the... you know, they're getting no-hitters of the week now. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I always felt you had to be lucky anyway to pitch a no-hitter, regardless of what kind of stuff you have. I mean, you know, there's a lot of balls during no-hitters that are hit hard, and they happen to be right at somebody. And I really pitched a better ball game in that one two or three times,
mm-hmm.
you know, than the no-hitter. I mean, I had a couple of one-hitters that I thought that I pitched much better than I did that day.
Now, that's my next question, is what you think your best game was. Let's go on about the no-hitters first.
Okay. I would say that you have to have a heck of a lot of luck, and I shouldn't say this too loud because I think it sounds kind of lousy for a former ball player to say that, hey, it's a little shallow today in the big leagues because I don't think there's the depth. I don't think there's the depth in the league that there used to be when you had 8 teams in each leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that there's some soft spots in the lineup.
Amen.
You know, where in the days where we were pitching, when I wasn't with Cincinnati, I mean, the Cincinnati ball club was a great hitting ball club. The Dodger ball club was a great hitting ball club. The Frisco ball club was a great hitting club. Milwaukee had a great hitting club. So, you know, when you went up and down the lineup, you didn't find any, you didn't find too many 220 hitters in there.
Yeah, it was tough. You know, there were, well, 8 guys anyhow. You still had pitchers, but go ahead. I agree with you 100%. I mean, those guys lineups. They have 2 legitimate, if that, batters, and then a bunch of guys filling up positions.
Yeah, and of course, not to say there aren't some good hitters today, because there are. But I would say that there's just not as many.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you go down the lineup and you go through the Dodger lineup with Campanella and Hodges and Jackie Robinson and Reese and Cox and Frillo and Snyder. And, you know, up at Milwaukee, you go through there with Crandall and Adcock and Chaney and Logan and Matthews and Bruton and Aaron and Wes Covington. I mean, you know, you just don't have concentration of hitters like that on the home club today.
What do you think with them throwing no-hitters every time you turn around now, what's going to happen in 2 years and there's a bunch of double-A and triple-A players?
Well, I think there's going to be more no-hitters. I mean, I think they're going to be on the upswing, and there'll be just as many probably in the next few years as there were this year. But on the other hand, I still think that old lady luck plays a very important part.
Oh, yes.
The other thing I will say, though, that I think in most cases the pitchers are coming up with more breaking balls today, and they have probably a little better control than some of us. They may not throw as hard, but they have pretty good control of their breaking ball today, and I think for that reason they're having a lot of success with hitters, because they do throw, you know, breaking balls 3-1, 2-0 quite a bit now, whereas in the days where I was pitching and in my era, I mean, you could pretty well look back and 3-1, 2-0 was a fastball, except if you had a Warren Spahn or Robin Roberts pitching, it was a little different, but there weren't, you know, it's there weren't as many breaking balls, okay, sliders and off-speed pitches and split fingers, you know, there wasn't such a thing when we were pitching.
Yeah, it does make a heck of a difference.
And I think that the pitchers in that respect have come a long way, you know. But I still think that they're pitching against probably not as good as hitters.
Yeah, I want to, you know, I'm just anxious to see the first time somebody like Martinez or Jose Rio or Gooden or somebody faces the new Colorado team or Florida team and see what happens.
Yeah, that's right. It would be, it's going to be interesting. You're very right.
Now, which game, is there one game or two games that stand out?
Yeah, I think so. I pitched, I think probably the best stuff I ever had in a ball game was in Cincinnati, and I pitched against the Dodgers, you know, the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one out in the ninth, and they didn't have a hit. And Pee Wee Reese got a broken bat base hit, and that's the only hit they got. And I probably had better stuff in that game than any game I ever pitched. And again, up in Milwaukee, I had two out in the eighth, and Hurricane Hazel, who was having a terrific year that year, I don't know whether you remember.
Sure.
When he came up, but he also got a bloop hit over second and short right, and that was the only hit I gave up. Those two games were, I think, probably I had better stuff than any games I ever pitched.
Yeah, I've talked to a couple of guys. Well, even Jim Bunning threw a perfect game, and he said that was nowhere near the sharpest he was that day.
Is that the one against the Mets?
Yeah.
I was there.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was with the Phillies then.
Oh.
Yeah, I would agree with him. You know, I've seen him pitch better ball games than that.
Mm-hmm.
And although he did pitch a good ball game, you have to when you hold a club to no runs and they don't get a hit. But I have seen him throw harder, I think, than seen him throw harder. There were three or four balls hit pretty good off of him that day.
Just excuse me just a minute.
Bubble bath.
I'm sorry, my little boy is getting home from school and the dogs are greeting him.
I was going to ask you if that was old Rattler out there.
It's his first cousin, I'll tell you. Whenever the kids get off the bus and the dogs are, they act like they haven't seen him for 5 years.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Bubble bath, house. Bubble bath.
I'm sorry. Where was it? But okay. You hit five home runs.
Yes, sir.
Do you remember? Well, I remember one of them because I.
Well, I.
Go ahead.
As you probably would guess, I can remember every one of them.
I bet, yeah.
There aren't that many, so I remember I hit the first one off of a pitcher by the name of Forrest Maine.
Mm-hmm.
He pitched for Pittsburgh.
I remember him.
And I think I hit the second one off of Johnny Lindell, who was a former outfielder, of course, for the Yankees, became a knuckleball pitcher.
Mm-hmm, a good one.
And I hit one off of Murray Dixon.
Good pitcher.
And then I hit one a little earlier, I think my second one I probably hit off of Bob Chipman, who was a left-hander pitcher for the Boston Braves.
Remember him, yeah.
And the last one I hit, which was probably one of the biggest thrills I got in baseball, I was playing for Cincinnati in 1962, the second time I was with Cincinnati Ball Club. We were playing in the old Houston ballpark,
mm-hmm.
And Bob Purkey pitched the first 10 innings, and it was a nothing-nothing ball game. And I went into relief in the 11th, and I pitched the 11th and 12th, top of the 13th, Fred Hutchinson was going to pinch hit for me, and Joe Gaines, who was going to hit for me, was in the on-deck circle, and the next guy made an out, made a two-out, nobody on, so he called Joe back and let me hit. And I took his little 33-ounce, 34-inch bat. He said, here, use this pretty good bat. And I just grabbed it, you know. And Don McMahon had come in to relieve Turk Farrell. Turk Farrell pitched the first 12. McMahon was pitching the 13th, and he hung a slider or something up there, and I hit it about 400 feet out of the park. And we win 1-0 in 13 innings. And if you think that isn't a thrill for a pitcher.
Well, I bet it is.
Yeah, that was quite a thrill. I can remember, I think it was Bob Aspermonte was playing third for Houston, and I was around that second, coming to third, and he just standing there with his hands on his hips and shaking his head, and I said, hey, if you think you're surprised, imagine how I feel.
Yes. Well, that's got to be pretty, that's quite exciting for anybody, of course, but especially for someone who doesn't bat often anyhow.
Right.
That was an extra inning home run. You want to talk about a negative aspect of your career?
Well, I would think probably, I can't give you specifics because it probably happened, I would say, 6 or 7 times where you go into the ninth inning and you have a one-run lead or two-run lead and somebody hits one out on you and beats you a ball game or hits one in between with a couple men on.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember 2 specific times it happening when Aaron hit a home run, beat me a ball game, and when I had it pretty well in hand at that time going into the ninth, and also over in Philadelphia when Smokey Burgess, who used to be with us in Chicago, he's with the Phillies then, and I had a couple men out in the eighth, and he beat me a ball game on a breaking ball that I hung, and he drove in 2 runs, beat us 4-3, but those are the worst kind. I think the worst feeling, though, that you can really have, the last 4 or 5 years, I was doing all 7th, 8th, and 9th inning relief work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Al Worthington up in Minnesota in 65 when I was with the Twins. And I think the worst thing is to come in and you got another pitcher's runners on the base, you know. And fortunately, that year I had a fairly good year, and it didn't happen too often. But 3 or 4 times you come in, you know, and there's 2 or 3 men on, and you give up a base hit, and it's the other guy's runs, and he gets lost. And
yeah.
I think I felt worse about that than if I'd lost it myself.
Yeah, that's a big responsibility.
Right. And, of course, you know, hopefully you get them out more times than you don't. Well, of course, if you don't get them out fairly often, you're not going to be out there anyway.
You're not going to get the chance, yeah.
Sometimes you're not going to get them out, and you can make a good pitch sometime and get beat. But I guess the worst thing is to make a bad pitch and have a guy hit it and have somebody else that runs on the bases and him get the loss and lose the ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
probably the worst feeling of all.
That's a big load, though, that guys in your position there take every day.
Yeah, it's of course you get all the rewards that when they go the other way.
That's right.
So then you get I guess the hardest thing to do is probably for a pitcher or an athlete is to come back the next day. That's why it's so important. I think you'll see a lot of times when a manager will get a pitcher right back in a ball game the next day if he's had a bad day, if he can't, you know, a reliever.
Yeah.
Because the longer that guy sits around and thinks about it, the worse he gets, you know.
I guess like falling off a bicycle, they say you got to get right back on.
That's about it. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think then you get back in the swing of things and you forget about that bad one and now you got a good one and you're going on a good one again.
Mm-hmm. A lot of psychology in managing.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think Bertie Tebbets was probably one of the greatest psychologists. He called us in one time, I remember in the beginning of the 56 season, and we almost won the pennant that year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we only finished 2 games out. At the beginning of the year, he called all the pitchers in, and he said, you know, he said, I've been reading the papers, you know what these guys are saying. They're saying we got a lousy pitching staff. He said, heck, I got 10 guys here who would run through a wall for me to pitch for me, and I think it's great. He says, we're going to be a lot better. He said, the hitters are not as good as everybody's saying they are, so we're going to have to pick those guys up. We're going to have to do a good job. So what we didn't know was about 2 weeks later, he called all the hitters and said, boys, you know what kind of pitching staff we're going to have to score a hell of a lot of runs.
Well, they did. Wasn't that the year they tied the home run record?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
I think it was a 221 or something.
221, yeah. Tied the 47 Giants.
Oh, we had some guys get swing at bat. And we didn't have a very good pitching staff. There was no doubt about it, but he was trying to pump us up, you know. Of course, we got wind of it when somebody slipped it out of the bag that he had told us we better go out and score a lot of runs.
Well, if it works, I wouldn't try anything.
Yeah.
You made it to 2 World Series.
Yes.
And they didn't score on you in either one.
No, I got in just 1 game in the first one, I think 2 in the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Funny part about it, in the one series, the last one, Koufax beat us in the 7th game 2-0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but I pitched a couple innings in that game. But the funny part about it, I had a runner on third base. I threw a changeup to Wes Parker. And I got it in a bad spot, and he tripled to open the inning. And I got him out without him scoring, so I felt pretty good about that. But that was about as close as I ever came to give up a run. And when he opened up with a triple, you think, well.
You think it's especially against that was not
a good chance to score, right?
That was not a great hitting Dodger team, but it was an awfully good team overall.
That's exactly right. Yeah. No, there was a better hitting ball club than that one back in the 50s, yeah.
Right. Yeah, when they had, Thurillo batting 8, that shows you it's pretty decent lineup.
That's right.
Who was the best player or best hitter that you came across?
Well, golly, there were so many of them. You know, I just think I often said that, and this was way before he ever broke the home run record, but I think Hank Aaron had to be as tough as anybody because we used to talk about it. You know, I was on a lot of ball clubs. I was on 8 ball clubs. Most of them had pitched to Aaron for quite a few years or had seen him or pitched against him at some time. And I think if you ask all the pitchers, I would say that 50% of the time that Aaron's name would come up. And I would have to say that for some reason certain pitchers get certain hitters out. And I had now Stan, who I you know, Musial, of course, is one of the greatest hitters ever played.
Sure.
And left-handers used to wear me out, and he got his hits off of me too. But I had better luck with him probably than I did with Aaron or Duke Snider. Or of course, Duke was kind of a streak hitter. You know, you catch him when he was hot, and you couldn't get him out. Another time, you might just throw the ball at the plate and get him out, but when he was hot, you didn't get him out too often.
Well, nobody got him out too often over the years.
But I would have to say the best all-around ball player, although I didn't see Mantle that much. You know, I pitched to Mickey some, but I'd have to say Mays all the way around, you know, as far as playing the outfield, throwing, and stealing bases, base running, and hitting. I'd have to say he was the best all-around ball player I saw.
He was awfully good, and I suspect an awful lot of people would answer that way.
Well, he could beat you individually, but if he got on that base, you know, he could steal second. And if he was on second and there was a base hit up the, say, in the middle up the, you know, back to second base, I mean, he was a threat to score from second base.
Mm-hmm.
If they make that play at first, he could score. And he could do a lot of things. That he got a great jump on the ball in the outfield, and he was a great base runner.
And I don't know if his hitting was so good, his fielding was not looked at, but he was an excellent fielder.
Oh, he was great. Yeah, he was. He really was. Of course, there were so many good ball players that, Shane Deans was a great ball player. And I thought, and Matthews in his time, you know, he never got the credit, I don't think, at third base, but he was a pretty good third baseman.
He sure did work at it.
Besides, he could swing the bat.
Yes.
Because there were so many good ball players that, I think one of the hardest nosed ball players, one of the best ball players I ever played with, was Roy McMillan.
Awfully good shortstop, yeah.
I mean, he never hit 300, but boy, I tell you, I never seen him make a bad throw more than once or twice, and I played with him 4.5 years. And he threw him from all over, you know, from the hole or over second or any place else, and I just didn't see him make any bad throws.
And you kind of wonder, as good as he was on grass, what he would do on these artificial surfaces.
Isn't that the truth?
He was something.
He was a great ball player, really was.
Who was the best pitcher you saw?
Well, you know, I often said that there were probably 2. I saw an awful lot of them. And, of course, Koufax in his prime. It'd be hard to say that anybody could pitch one ball game better than him, when he was in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he had a short career.
Yes.
I think overall, though, I would probably have to go with Spahn. Spahn was an amazing pitcher because if you watched him pitch, you'd watch him give up seven or eight hits, maybe walk one, maybe they boot one or two. And you have 9 or 10 men on base, sometimes 11 or 12 men on base in a ball game. He only scored one run.
Mm-hmm.
And he could be 3-1 six, seven times during a ball game, never walk you, would never throw you a pitch down a pipe to hit. You know, he'd turn it over a little bit or he'd throw you a fastball. He only threw 30 fastballs a game, but he always threw them when you weren't looking for them or they were always in a good spot.
Mm-hmm.
He was an amazing pitcher.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Oh. And, but again, you'd have to put, I'd say Koufax, Spahn, and Gibson, you could, you know, I'd like to have them all three on my staff.
You'd take your chances, wouldn't you?
Drysdale wasn't too bad either, and neither was Bunning, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah. I think more per square inch in your time than there are now.
I would think so, but again, I can't say it too loud.
Yeah, well, we'll put it in small print.
Yeah, there you are.
Your last year with Cincinnati was the first time, was what, 57?
58.
You left in 58
right.
Midseason.
My full year was 57.
Well, this was pretty much at the peak of the bonus baby era, and Cincinnati resisted until there almost when the it was ended, but then they started signing some boys. And I guess Jay Hook came as close to making it as anybody they signed. What was the general attitude toward the players, toward these kids that were coming in with all this money?
I think they were a little upset at first. I really do. I wasn't, because I felt that any time an owner is willing to pass out money to a guy, well, you can't blame the ball player for taking it.
Of course not.
And I think that probably there was a lot of conversation, probably more conversation and really earnest feelings. But, you know, they were talking about it. They were saying, well, these guys, you know, they're not even driving by any years and getting money. We've been up here for a long time. We can't make any money. And they weren't making any money. That's true. I mean, the salaries were not very high in those days.
Was it six minimum at that time?
Excuse me?
Was it a 6,000 minimum at that time?
Well, it was 5,000 when I came up with the Cubs in 50.
Uh-huh.
And I believe in, I think about 3 or 4 years later it went to 6 and then to 7. But I'm not sure of what year in the 50s it went to 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was up in the latter part of the 50s, the middle 50s. I think it was 6. But I don't recall. I know it was 5 when I came up in 1950. It took me about 3 or 4 years to get to 7.
It sure is strange to compare that with what's going on today.
It really is, I guess. But, of course, I had a lot of guys tell me, too, that were fellows I went to school with, said, hey, you were making 5,000. I was out there working. I only made 3, so.
Yeah. Well, a fellow told me that he was making, it was Ray Boone. I guess, I don't know if you played against him or not. He was in the other league. But
I did a couple of times, but briefly.
He said that he was, it's maybe a bit different amount, but the percentages may not be too far different. He was making 20,000, and the guys back home that he knew that were teaching school were making 4.
Yeah.
And
right. Yeah.
So everything's relative.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Would you go back, I know at age 16 there'd be no question, but would you go back knowing what you know now and be a ball player again?
Yes. I'd do the same thing over.
Great.
I loved it.
And what about any regrets or disappointments along the way?
I felt at the time that I didn't think the ball players were getting a lot of help in some cases from coaches. I think once you got to the big leagues, they more or less let you go on your own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really work with you that much. I think the minor leagues had some pretty good coaches down there, but again, when you got to the big leagues, you were more or less there, and you do it, you know. And there wasn't a lot of fellows teaching you different things about pitching. Really, the most I was helped. Of course, Dutch Leonard. I married Dutch's niece, so I'm probably prejudiced, but Dutch helped me quite a bit.
He was an awfully good pitcher.
And also Johnny Sain,
mm-hmm.
who I thought was a good pitching coach. Because he used to plant the idea, but he never really pushed it on you, you know, where the point where he was offensive or tried to make you do things you couldn't do. And I think he more or less let you make your own decisions, but planted the seed or planted the idea, which I thought was a pretty good way to go about it.
I think he's a legend as a pitching coach.
Yeah, he was. He did a hell of a job. He lives up here in Aris now. He's in Oak Brook, Illinois here.
Oh, that's just hops, skipping a jump, isn't it? Well, that's great. I'm glad we got together because it turned out to be a good interview. And I appreciate it. Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Do you want to see this before I send it to the magazine?
No, I think I can tell by talking to you that you know probably as much or more about the game than I do, so I don't think I certainly don't think it'd misquote me, and I wouldn't feel bad about that at all.
Okay, well, that's, I don't want to misquote anybody, and a lot of fellas do want to see it, which, you know, that's fine. I'd be happy to send it, but well, do you want some copies of the magazine when it comes out?
I would love to have a copy or two, yeah.
Okay, how many would you like?
Two or three is fine.
Okay, great. We'll do it. It will be several months. There's a lag phase, and there's no rhyme or reason that I can tell to their schedule. But it may be 6 months. But I will let you know when it comes out, and
great.
We will send you three copies.
Well, that'd be great. I really appreciate it.
John, I appreciate it, too. I've enjoyed this very much. As I told you in the letter, I don't know if you remember, when I was a kid, you were one of my probably five or six favorite ball players.
Well, that's great. It's very nice of you to say that.
Well, I'd